This is the South Florida Tech Podcast, a weekly show where we bring you the awesome, innovative people building our South Florida tech community. Each week, we'll introduce to you one of the Sunshine State's top business, startup, or tech leaders. Learn about who they are, what they do, and have some fun conversation along the way. Our podcast sponsor is Emerge Americas. Each year, global enterprises, disruptive technology, and elite startups are highlighted at Emerge's premier tech event, Connecting the Americas. The event is held in Miami Beach, which to date has hosted organizations from over 40 countries and featured over 250 speakers from around the world. Emerge Americas is transforming Miami's tech hub by connecting entrepreneurs, investors, leading business executives, and decision makers.
I want to actually introduce somebody I met at Emerge Americas and got to learn about his company with several years ago. And that is Andrew Parker, the founder of PopPop, a company that offers family on demand by connecting older adults and families to college students for companionship, assistance, and transportation. Prior to PopPop, Andrew ran health system sales and strategy for MD Life, a large telehealth provider here in South Florida. And in that role, he helped facilitate multi-year relationships for some of the nation's largest health systems and employers, as well as design virtual care products, which have now become really just a part of everyday healthcare. Andrew received a bachelor's from Florida State University, go Seminoles, and is a Y Combinator alumnus. He resides in Brickell in Miami with his dog Chewy, and we are very happy to have him on. So welcome very much, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, Joe and Joe.
So just to kick us off, tell us just generally, who are you? Who's Andrew? And tell us a little about PopPop.
Sure. So I'm Andrew, as you mentioned. I founded PopPop. But beyond that, I'm also a person. I grew up here in South Florida. So I've been here since I'm 5 years old. I moved down from New York as a small child and really grew up here. You went to elementary through high school here, went to college at Florida State, where, as Joe mentioned, I went to there for finance. After college, I had a lot of difficulty finding a job, though I did apply to over 400 places, and most of them thought I would go off to be an entrepreneur, which, you know, obviously had some foreshadowing, but at the time I needed a job and I needed to pay for rent and I needed to pay for food. So ultimately I got a door-to-door sales job, which was terrible, but in the Florida heat, you know, in a suit going door-to-door literally, and in Palm Beach actually, was one of my territories, you know, trying to sell something that was effectively impossible. And then one day I broke my leg after work playing basketball, which kind of forced me to quit the job. And now I had a resume, got a really good opportunity to work in AT&T as a kind of a sales leadership consulting program, where I learned public speaking and consultative sales and product, you know, strategy. And then I was fortunate enough to start working at this small, very small startup, a kind of a wonky idea called MD Live Care at the time, which my dad had actually started, that provided telehealth services. So that was my first foray into a startup. I joined as a salesperson, as you mentioned, and, you know, was there for 7 years. That company grew to be very big. I experienced product development, strategy, hiring, sales was definitely a big part of my responsibility. And team building. And it was really the best experience ever and a really great opportunity for me to learn how to build a business, you know, kind of in the sidecar. And then in 2017, came up with this concept, PopPop, really originally to support my grandfather, who was my PopPop. So that's a very fast story to get to where we are today, which is, I run PopPop now with about 150 employees and thousands of PopPop halls across the country getting access. The platform to provide services to older adults and families, mostly through insurance companies. So that's who I am and what I do today.
I love it. And I love the slogan, you know, grandkids on demand. It's so, so awesome. And it's also cool to hear that probably your relationships from MD Live in terms of health insurance, where you could carry them over to this. So this is really cool. So we go back to the MD Live days. I love MD Live. They're still one of our biggest hiring partners, which is really cool. But it's funny to hear you applied to 400 jobs and those people are like, no, we don't want you. You're going to be an entrepreneur. It sounds like you weren't sure yet at that time because you were like, no, I want to get a job. So I was wondering, can you share, like, have you always, like thinking back now, because hindsight's 2020, were you always destined to be an entrepreneur? Was this always the path you wanted to be on? Was riding in the sidecar with your dad building MD Live and you working there, like really the thing that sealed the deal? You know, just maybe talking a little bit about how is it that you came to be an entrepreneur, sure. And Yeah.
Sure. I think everyone has their own path for sure to everything. But for me personally, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur in theory. My dad is an entrepreneur always, my whole life. I've never seen my dad have a normal job, not to say all of his ventures have been successful, but seeing him hustle and work hard and figure it out, you know, off of something that he came up with at the table. So I had that as an inspiration. My grandfather, Papa, was an entrepreneur. Actually, I recently found out that every blood male related to me is an entrepreneur of some kind. Some are doctor practice, some own jewelry stores. You know, some have large healthcare companies like my dad had or has. And so for me, I think that was just like what I saw. And I was, I don't want to say I was lazy, but I never like dove into too much to where I saw my friends do like summer jobs. And I would do always like a hack. All of my jobs were a hack of some kind. Like I figured out how to install hurricane shutters and then I would build a business around that. Or I figured out that I could actually take the scraps from the hurricanes and build a business around that. I figured out I learned how to make CDs early on, you know, like ripping them from the internet, which, you know, it wasn't exactly the appropriate thing. And I figured out a way to do it legally actually at like 17. So I kind of always had these like odd, not even jobs, like self-starting like projects almost. And so I think it was there somewhere, but I don't think I really knew that for sure. It was just, I needed money. And that was like in my head, the best way to do it. And then I wanted to get an opportunity to build a startup and I tried and I figured I didn't have a lot of money and I didn't know how to build a tech and I couldn't afford engineers and I don't have engineers. And I kind of had all these assumptions, which I think a lot of people do, and decided to ultimately, you know, go down a path of working. I did think it was important for me to understand like what it even means to work, like have a real responsibility outside of something I just come up with. And I think that helped with the foundation. And then I did that for 2 years and was fortunate to join NB Live, which was really a full startup. It was six people, you know, maybe 10 people after a month after I was there. I had a mentor that really helped me. And I think because of that, to answer your question, like, yes, I definitely have the watching my dad and watching this unfold in front of me and also being involved in things like when you're at a startup, I need a marketing piece. Okay, who's the marketer? I guess I am. I mean, the bathrooms are dirty. Who's going to do it? Okay, I mean, I'll clean the bathroom if I have to. Who's going to code? I don't know how to code, but like I can figure out like a landing page. And so you're just like forced to learn these many skills. And I think ultimately that was like my training facility effectively. And so when I left, I felt like I had a little bit of a leg up on myself. So I definitely, it was always there for sure. But I think until the day, like I'm the type of person that once I decide something, it's like, it happens. And so until that literally day, I remember it. I don't think I knew for sure that I was going to actually do something. I had ideas, but I never went forward.
Sounds very familiar, getting an idea in your head and then not stopping with it until you see it come to life. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's been a lot of push over the last few years of, you know, entrepreneurship and building startups in a lot of places. You intentionally chose to stay in Florida to build Papa, on top of course, raising money from California, San Francisco, doing Y Combinator, which is based out there. Why did you say Florida's our home? We're going to stick here. We're going to make this our HQ and keep on that growth trajectory here in South Florida.
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, my mom would kill me.
Good point. As everybody should know.
Yeah. No. All jokes. She would have killed me. But all jokes aside, you know, we went to Y Combinator. It was an amazing experience. We met really great people. It's definitely helped us in many ways, which I could get into at some point. But for us, you know, Florida's our home. I grew up here, and so did Alfredo. Well, he didn't, but he's been here, and he's made his family here. And you know, I've always been here. And we just didn't think that we needed to be in San Francisco. Like we talked about it a lot. And like we were there for 4 months or so. And so every day we'd kind of meet at the corner and say, Alfredo and I would say like, okay, where do you want to work today? And we like kind of take a different path down to where we work. And on that 30 minute walk, which was awesome, we would at part talk about like, you know, we should stay in San Francisco. Like we effectively tried to convince ourselves. But what we found out was we weren't, and this is not common, we were not able to convince ourselves. We found that Florida had everything we needed. In fact, it had a little bit of an opportunity to, you know, be this really great tech company that we wanted to become, and we could attract more people and we could kind of make Florida better and improve it. and there's a lot of talent here. So we felt like it was almost like an untapped pool versus me trying to compete with like the, you know, Googles of the world. It's a little bit of a different approach. So for us, it ended up becoming a no-brainer. We're glad that we have, as I kind of refer to, a lasso to the West, but we are staying here. And as you know, happy to talk about it, but we're, you know, about to open up our own headquarters, you know, officially in our own home. And so we're continuing to plant seeds and, you know, encouraging the team to bring people from this ecosystem into the Papa family when possible.
So just a follow-up from that, I mean, dive into Papa for us real quick, especially as it relates to, you know, South Florida, because this is obviously your first market, you know, building it here, growing it here. But walk us through, like, why one, South Florida is a good, like, first market for that, and two, like, what the average person who is either on either side of Papa is looking at as far as the service that you guys act as a more kind of an intermediary, I think, in some ways with.
Yeah, so Papa's like a curated marketplace. It's, I think some would refer to it as like the fourth evolution of marketplaces, like with kind of job postings on a piece of paper on a wall being the first, and then kind of going through the evolution there. And so for us, we really have three sides of our marketplace. We have health plans, which offer this to their older adult members or family that are getting access to the benefit through their insurance carrier, mostly for free. Most of our services are actually free to older adults and families, and it's paid for by insurance. So we partnered with the likes of Humana and Aetna, to name a few, Florida Blue as well here in South Florida and across the state. The second piece is the older adult themselves. So this is the person that's getting the value of the solution. And then the third piece, of course, is the Papa Pal. So it's a really interesting business, and the Papa Pal is what we call the companions, and they'll drive you and they'll help you and they'll teach you and they'll engage you. And they'll be, you know, as Joe mentioned, family on demand or grandkids on demand, as we used to refer to it. And we recently expanded, and I could touch on that too. But for us, it's really a platform that allows for all of these things to happen simultaneously, though they're actually very different worlds. Like, they almost couldn't be more different. We have, you know, on average, like 25-year-olds, on average, like 75-year-olds, and then executives at health plans. I mean, so for us, it has to work in all those roles at the same time. And we started in South Florida. One, you know, most of the reason I would say is I live here originally. And then, of course, in addition to that, Florida is a mecca for older adults in terms of a percentage of our population, and some markets more than others. And it's actually a very rich, not meaning financially rich, but there's a lot of options in terms of Medicare Advantage. So the top tier plans all have membership here. And so that means that every plan could test with Papa in this area. And if they, and by plan, I mean health plan. And if they decide that it's a good fit for them and brings value to their members and proves outcomes, because if you're lonely and isolated and don't have a car, you are gonna have worse healthcare outcomes. You're gonna die prematurely based on statistics. It's equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. You know, loneliness is, in my opinion, the only universal disease. I believe almost everyone, you know, if you haven't been lonely in any way, please provide some advice to the rest of us. But I think, you know, it's just part of human nature, and companionship is so critical, but there's so much value in between, you know, that to support health plans, older adults, and families, as well as Papa Pals. So Florida is where we started, just in South Florida. Well, in fact, just in Coconut Creek with one person. Our first official member was Olga, who we think about all the time, and she recently passed. But for us, it's just been one day at a time. We started with Olga, and then we got our second member's name is Gloria. Our third member's name is Sam, who we still spend a lot of time with. So just generally, you know, we've been building up from there. And Florida also is great because it allows us to say, this is a great place to build a tech company, and we're proving it, and we're doing it in the senior space. So it's like all the things at once. And I'm very happy about the progress we've had so far.
I love that. I mean, I'm all about that thesis, as you guys, as we originally first connected. I mean, totally agree with you on this being a great place to run a tech company and find great talent. So that's awesome to hear. And also, like, so inspiring to hear the bridges you guys have built. You know, it, you know, having family on demand, it makes it very easy for everyone to understand what it is you guys do. But hearing you, like, break it down like that, it's so much deeper than that.
Yeah.
So that it's pretty amazing. I hope you're getting moments to celebrate that. But I will say another really cool thing that I love hearing about and seeing in your journey is, you have investors, some of whom are pretty cool. You've gone through the whole investment process, which raising money is a full-time job. And, you know, you brought in the likes of Alexis Ohanian, Ashton Kutcher. So can you talk a little bit about like the invest, you know, getting capital in general, what were strategies that worked for you? And then it also be, you know, it's pretty cool to have such famous individuals. Alexis is the founder of Reddit and Serena's husband. What's it like raising money? And then in addition to that, you have these public famous people who are on your investment team. So what are the pros and cons of that element too? Because investors can be tricky.
Yes, I think so. This is my first time doing that. Though, you know, I probably anecdotally was involved in the past, but in terms of like running a full process, and it is a full-time job, no matter, you know, how good you're doing, it's just a long process and there's a lot that goes into it that, you know, as you progress, it in some ways gets, in some ways it gets more complex in some, or in terms of the amount of time consuming levels of activity and sometimes less. So in the beginning, at like a pre-seed round, I didn't have any famous investors or any investors at all. I had myself, I put in my life savings. And that, you know, wasn't a lot of money, but it helped us to at least, at a minimum, show that I have commitment. I mean, it may have not been the right decision.
A little skin in the game.
Yeah, like I'm involved. Like I believe this is real because I'm putting all my money into it. And I'm foregoing like that house payment that I was thinking about getting. So that's step one. And that's not the only method, by the way. There's a million methods. Step two was, okay, I quit my job. It's actually going to be a real business. And I want to make this thing a big thing. And just in my head, I thought, and this may be wrong or right, I need money to do that. And so I went off to raise, I think like $500,000. And I had this idea that I don't think I put like a significant amount of thought into it. I built a deck that I found, you know, formats online. And I literally just started going around. That's probably the first time, you know, I interacted with both of you guys was some journey of me trying to find money from someone in some network near you in some capacity. And I'm glad we've become friends since that moment. But at the time I was just really hustling. And as my dad used to joke, you got to keep your cup out, you know, at that time period, you're convincing people with a PowerPoint, you know, that, you know, maybe a little traction that you are the person to take their $1,000 or $10,000 or $100,000. And you're going to make it worth more money that instead of them buying a house, they should give that to you, you know? So it's an interesting approach. And then going to Y Combinator, that's what opened up. And that's why I say I have a lasso to the West Coast. Y Combinator gave us Papa access to people like, you know, that you mentioned. And we were really fortunate to meet Alexis's fund at the time, which was Initialized Capital during Y Combinator. And, you know, we actually got a lot of interest. That was the most fun day of my life, probably. And I've been trying to replicate that exact like 5 minute period, but it's been very difficult. Though it's been good still. And so anyway, we were able to meet at Alexis. And then I remember someone sent me an email like, oh, hey, Andrew, would you mind meeting Ashton? And I'm like, let me check to see if I can meet Ashton real quick. You know what? I'm okay. I could do it. And so very fortunate to have gotten him into it. And he's a serious investor, just like Alexis is as well. So they both bring different value and have been really helpful and supportive. And it's not just them, they have teams and, you know, in particular, both of them have been great. So, and we have other investors as well, but those are some of the more notable ones. And then from there, you know, we have now raised our B round of funding most recently that we did during COVID. That was interesting. Actually, from this little box you're watching, that's kind of where it happened. And that's just another challenge, you know, just like when you start the company to when you're building it to, I have to evolve every 90 days. And it's personally, I feel really comfortable with that. I think I need that effectively. So it does align to your earlier question with like who I am at my core, I think.
It's kind of cool to hear that the 5 minutes of pitching at YC was one of the happiest moments of your life. I can only imagine it was, but you know, talk about the door-to-door sales paying off, right? Because to give a good pitch takes a lot of practice. It sounds like it kind of culminated in that, which is cool.
Yeah, I've been like throwing myself in fire since like 1987, the day I was born. I think that it's also kind of a weird thing. Like I feel quite more, I like almost know that I'm gonna be worried about it and nervous, but I wanna put myself in this like intense situation. I don't know why, it's like this weird fight or flight type thing going on. Yeah, maybe it's a psychotic thing, but I always felt comfortable, you know, talking to anyone about anything. And I think it's funny, my friends when I was growing up used to make fun of me and they'd call me the social butterfly. And it was like it was a complete like rag on me, because we'd go to somewhere and we would be 12 or 14 or 16, whatever age group, as we continue to age, I keep doing it. I would just like run off and meet whoever, wherever, and almost like wouldn't even be able to sit still with one group. And it's funny, like years later, I start a platform that's connecting people for social interaction, you know? And so that plus, you know, trying to sell and frankly, feeling comfortable with no, you know, I heard no a lot of my life, obviously, and so did everyone. And this is like kind of that cliche thing, but the truth is like, no is, I don't see it as a no, it's just part of it. So it's more like, you know, not now.
Yeah, that's something interesting though. I feel like somebody, you've probably given your pitch hundreds of times, you know, and I think a lot of people look at startups through like the lens of Shark Tank in the 21st century, right? They saw the show and they're like, okay, you got your like few minutes there where it's like make or break. And sometimes it's the, just the pitch repetitive over and over and over again that gets it done. It's not just 1 5-minute period. It's just being repetitive. And then you get those different connections. And that's always kind of special because you hear about people pitching 1,000 times. And then it's always like that one or two like bits of a story that really kind of makes it.
Yeah. Well, Gary Tan, who's part of Initialize, would say like 10 years to an overnight success. And that's kind of what that is. And there are overnight successes, but they're incredibly insanely rare. And so for the most part, it's just about, as I tell my girlfriend, chipping away. You just got to chip away. And that's with everything, really. When you're practicing your pitch, or you're trying to sell a client, or you're trying a new channel, or you're trying to hire engineers, or you're learning a new code, you know, whatever it is, it's all practice. You know, I think Malcolm Gladwell talks about 10,000 hours, and I think that's really relevant. I've effectively been pitching Papa for well over 10,000 hours, whether that was specifically Papa or something else. I think it's all part of it.
Yeah. So aside from Papa for a moment, what do you do outside of work? As a startup founder, I feel like people always think like, you know, you're probably just consumed with the job, but you got hobbies. You obviously have Chewy at home, you know, biking. I think I heard is a hobby of yours as well, but what do you do outside of the office?
Sure. My life and work is very mixed in together, so I don't really think about it like that. I do not have kids, and I think that's a huge element maybe, but my co-founder has kids and seems to be handling it incredibly well. You know, we empower people here. So as we build, and of course that's easier now, not easier, but more ability to do so now versus before, but really trust the team. So for me, I have a lot of hobbies. I mean, I love snowboarding a considerable amount. My parents live out in Colorado and I'm able to go there. So I abuse it and I work from there. I don't really, you know, it's just kind of work, you know, during the day, I'll go snowboard for 2 hours, come back and do work. I'll stop in the, I've done calls on the mountain with my headphones. You know, what's that noise in the background? Oh, you know, I'm snowboarding. They're like, what do you mean? Like, you're on vacation? Like, no, I'm literally snowboarding right now. And so that's, you know, it's all very intertwined. Hanging out with Chewy, my 70-pound pit bull, that's the sweetest boy ever. It's actually his birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday, Chewy.
Which is cool. Yeah, we sang him happy birthday. He was very, didn't seem to care. And, you know, hanging out with my girlfriend, Romy, and we like hiking and going on adventures. We're actually going to Georgia tomorrow, but it's all mixed into my life. And, you know, it's really important for me to hang out with my family and friends. I love Papa and I am obsessed with it, but I will say sometimes I try not to talk about it because a lot of the times the space in between is where you get the most value. And I notice about me is if I just let my brain keep going, you know, I may end up actually crashing, you know, not like my thoughts may not actually go into a proper direction. So just by, you know, kind of stepping back for a second, and it doesn't have to be like an extreme meditation program or anything, but just, you know, go play basketball for an hour, you know, go watch a movie. Like, don't talk about Pop at all the next time you go to a family gathering, like, or whatever, your company. So to do that, I think actually helps, though it seems counterintuitive.
Wise words. It's so hard to have that discipline. And I will also take those words to heart. So that's awesome. And thanks for sharing that. Okay, so before we, as we are wrapping up here, we do have a little rapid fire
okay. for you.
So the first question is, what is the book on your nightstand currently?
Meditations by Marcus Aurelius.
Good one.
It's a journal entry of just his Stoic thoughts.
Very cool. And sounds like it's good bedtime reading.
I'm also reading Devil in the White City, but it's a little bit hard at bedtime because it's quite scary.
All right. I like it. What is your most productive time of day?
I'm probably most productive like middle of the day. I am very productive in the morning, but middle of the day is like when I feel like I kick into the gear. Usually after lunch, I get a little bit of an energy boost and just go at it. But I'm always energized. I'm pretty much on or off.
That's great. What about the time you go to bed?
I go to bed like 10 o'clock.
And the time you wake up?
I wake up at like 8 o'clock.
You're getting some very good rest.
Sleep is important. I told you it's about the space in between.
It's very, very important.
I am not a huge podcast person, so I will say this is my favorite podcast.
Well, we always like
that. I'm more of an Audible book guy, if I had to categorize myself.
Love it. And do you have a motto or, you know, a mantra or a quote that you live by that continues to drive and inspire you? And what is that?
I think just generally not overthinking everything. I don't think there's like a specific quote, but any quote that references that, you know, I think everyone gets into the weeds with so many things, and not to say you shouldn't be detail oriented, but it's okay. Like, and I think maybe COVID has opened up people's mind to feel like it's all okay. Like I used to jokingly say to my friends, everything's middle school. And I kind of feel like that was like a very wise future statement I made probably in middle school, where like, we're just normal people. Everyone's pushing hard. Most of us hopefully are good people and caring and thoughtful, and just keep doing that. And that's okay. If you mess up, that's okay. So that's not a quote, but it's a paragraph of my thoughts.
That's great.
That is good. Good thought for sure. And with that, maybe that is it, but what advice would you have for any aspiring tech leader or tech founder here in South Florida today?
Take a chance for sure. I mean, I didn't see it as risk. Stop looking at it as risk. And if it is risk, it could be. I'm not trying to say like blind yourself to it, but when I started Papa, I didn't have kids. I had very little responsibilities. I had to pay my rent, you know, and eat. And so for me, taking the leap is that's the right time. So don't be overly scared. You're not going to know all the answers day one. That's really the truth. And so just chip away at it.
Gotcha. Thank you so much to Andrew for spending some time here with us. For those who are tuning in, take a look at palmbeachtech.org, get involved, be a part of this community, share your thoughts and insights, just like Andrew did today with somebody. I want to give our thanks to our sponsor, WinCode, as well. And if you're looking to take part in a coding bootcamp or look to launch your career in technology, go to wincode.co. They have courses in software development, UI, UX, digital marketing, and there's plenty going on with them. So do take a look. Andrew, thank you again so much. And best of luck to you and Papa in the months and years ahead.
Thank you, Joe and Joe. Have a good day.
Have a good one.
Thanks, guys.
We'd like to thank our producing sponsor, MediaOps. They're the premier global media platform for technical communities with brands such as DevOps.com, Security Boulevard, Container Journal, and Digital Anarchist. DevOps.com, their primary brand, attracts and engages a thriving online community of technology professionals around the world. It is the largest collection of original content relating to DevOps on the web today, featuring up-to-the-minute news, highlighted stories, blogs, and more.